Wake up, wake up. It's a Friday, Rams week. Same old Rams, same old Niners. We're going to find out. We got a lot to get to. Busy Friday. I'm here in Santa Clara, down in our luxurious studios here at Levi Stadium. Damon's in the home studio. Let's go.
Oh, wake up indeed. It's great to have everyone here the Friday before what is nothing short of the biggest game of the year. I mean, it really is. How the West is won will be determined very much. A huge vote into how the West is won will be cast this Sunday. And Larry, I know that you were joking a little bit saying same old Rams, same old Niners. Boy, these teams are really different than the two teams that met just a handful of weeks ago. And we're going to talk all about that, but it is wonderful to have everybody back here today. I know that there were a lot of frustrations this week over what did or did not happen at the trade deadline. We're going to talk about that. We're going to take a deep look at the 49ers and Rams, what game we're expecting to actually see, who's going to play, and how the rest of this year is going to shake out. Like and subscribe, our good friends. Please go ahead and be with us each and every Friday for Wake Up before when the 49ers play. Every single day after the 49ers play. So we'll be back at it on Monday morning, 9 a.m. West Coast time. Like and subscribe to both The Krug Show and Damon Bruce Plus. And we got to thank our sponsors, Larry. It's how we're able to do this, how you're able to go on the road down to Santa Clara, how I'm able to make this all happen. Thanks so much to Ike of Ike Sandwiches, an incredible sandwich. I got a guy who says he's finally had one. He tried a Damon Bruce, and man, that was really good. I'm telling you, fat boys don't lie about good sandwiches. So get yourself to Ike's. Thanks so much to the Dubliner West Portal. I'm even rocking this shirt today. I'm rocking a Bars t-shirt. Yeah, baby. Dubliner West Portal. Great place to watch 49ers and Rams. If you can't get down to Santa Clara and actually be at the game yourself, you have a lot of like-minded good folks in the neighborhood. Dubliner West Portal. And Larry's going to tell you about Sleeper. But first, pigs and pickles.
Well, yeah, thank you, Pig and a Pickle, for being the title sponsor of The Krug Show. Check them out. They're in Corte Madera. They're in Emeryville. We're going to have The Krug Show meet and greet during the bye week. It's going to be, I believe, it's week 14. I believe it is the 7th of December. It's week 14, bye week. I'll be there throughout the Sunday. Stop by. We're going to have kind of an open house at Pig and a Pickle. Stop by, get some barbecue, watch some ball, hang out, have a beer. Eat some amazing food, maybe meet Damon and Mary, and you're all welcome. I'd love to see you there. So we'll do that in mid-December. Look forward to that. Thanks to Pig and a Pickle for being the sponsor. Also, thanks to Sleeper. 49er football season is presented by Sleeper, the fastest growing fantasy platform in the entire world. It's a one-stop shop. You guys have been there. You get blazing fast news, real-time stats, group chat, season-long leagues, and Sleeper picks for daily fantasy. Use promo code Larry, L-A-R-R-Y, and Sleeper will match your first deposit up to $100. Links in the description. Terms and conditions do apply. Also, thanks to Sharp Corner Sports Cards and Collectibles. They're offering free shipping on all collectibles between now and the holidays for all you guys. If you're a Krug Show fan, just say so, and you get free shipping through the holidays on anything you order from Sharp Corner Sports Cards and Collectibles. Thanks to them, and we'll tell you more about Habas Law later on. But thanks to Habas Law as well for all that they do in the community and for being a proud sponsor of The Krug Show. But Damon, we are off and running. We titled this stream Biggest Game of the Year. And, you know, let's get into it a little bit. I mean, Niners-Rams, you mentioned it. These teams had a tilt in week five, and it had a feeling like the Niners showed up and the Rams didn't. The Rams did not have a good game. Ultimately, Sean McVay blamed the loss on himself when he opted to run 195-pound Kyren Williams into the teeth of the 49er run defense on 4th-and-1 in the fourth quarter instead of using Matthew Stafford to throw it to Puka Nacua or whomever. And McVay took the blame. He said, hey, man, it was on me. And Niners, you know, won that game. Mac Jones played amazing, threw for over 300 yards. Alfred Collins made the play of the year on the goal line with the forced fumble recovery at the one. An incredible performance by Kendrick Bourne, maybe the greatest performance of his career.
Seriously, can he do that again?
The Niners ran it 33 times, Damon, but they didn't have any success, but they did stay with it. They ran 33 times for 2.2 yards per carry and won the game. The Rams, on the other hand, ran it effectively, 4.9 yards per carry, but only ran it 16 times and threw it 40-plus times. So I think the Rams feel like they're the better team and one got away. The odds have started at Niners or Rams minus 2.5. It's now Rams minus 4.5. A lot of people think the Rams are going to party in this game. We're going to find out.
You know, here's the thing. I don't think that this game allows either team to really throw a party on the other team, regardless of the state that either franchise is in. From a win-loss record, from a who's playing today record, there is just something about familiarity breeding contempt between these two, and say whatever you want. I don't think it's an exaggeration to say the Rams are rolling in with a better, healthier football team. But Kyle Shanahan beats this better, healthy football team when Sean McVay is coaching it more often than he loses to them. He's got McVay's number a little bit. And maybe it even gets McVay inside of his own head. He told you that he immediately started second-guessing that fourth and short call back from their earlier tilt. So, you know, the Niners got as good of a puncher's chance as I think that they can have against a really good football team in this game. I like their chances to win. I really do. And maybe it's because everything about this game is saying the opposite. This should be a big day for the Rams. The NFL is littered with what was supposed to happen didn't all season long. There's also a little bit of a, like we said, Larry, I don't want to say an identity crisis. The Niners know who they are. The Niners know what they do. They sometimes run the ball well. They most of the time run the ball poorly. They've been able to throw the ball well, regardless of circumstances. But they're not like averaging EPA like they were. I saw Kawakami saying, you know, it's pretty amazing this team is 6-3 considering they're not even moving the ball like they were last year. And there are a lot of data points to say that it's pretty held together with, you know, duct tape and spackle 6-3. But the Niners know who they are and know what they do, and they come out and they try to do the same thing all the time. The Rams are in a little bit of an identity crisis, and that's, to me, the key to this game. Not which Rams team shows up, but how are the Rams even going to go about playing the 49ers? We know that they can spread it out and throw the ball all over the place. They got the talent to do that. Last week, for the first time this season, the Rams metamorphosized, Larry, into something that they're really not, but they had quite a bit of success with it. 2-3 tight end sets. We're going to see a lot of those, I think, again this weekend because the Niners scream, hey, bully us up front. And to me, you put three tight ends in your offense, you're playing bully ball. Do you think McVay is going to try to pound the line of scrimmage and run a lot of 3-2 tight end looks like he did last week in such a way it stands out like a sore thumb compared to any other game that the Rams have played this year?
I mean, I don't, just because when I asked Robert Saleh about that, I mentioned that trend to Robert Saleh, and he said he expected more 12 personnel, which is, you know, less three tight ends and more two tight ends. He said they did that last week largely out of necessity due to injury. So we'll see. I actually think it's advantage 49ers if the Rams want to play kind of a, you know, big. The Niners have the personnel to play that game. They want to play a slowdown. You know, we're going to fight it out in a phone booth kind of a thing. That plays right into the Niners' strengths.
Right. I'd almost rather try to beat them in space and create just hell.
You're the Rams. I mean, you know, the thing about this, I mean, ESPN's got the stat this morning. According to ESPN research, the Niners and the Rams, they just always play close games. I mean, when they two teams met, it was a field goal difference in overtime, and the Niners won it 26-23 in week 5. But that was the 8th game, including the playoffs, in games coached between McVay and Shanahan, decided by 3 points or less. And that's tied for the 3rd most for any NFL coaching matchup in the history of the NFL. So these teams play really close, tight, hard-fought games. What I can't decide in this one, Damon, is I can't decide if this is going to be a freaking shootout And Stafford's coming in with a full arsenal. He threw for four Bills last week, or four touchdowns last week. He threw for 400 yards and or 300 plus yards in the game earlier this year against the Niners. So, I mean, is it a high scoring game where the Niners can't stop because they have no rush? Can they not stop Stafford and the Rams? And then does it become kind of a shootout? Because do the Niners start putting up 28 to 30 points a game out of necessity, and it's a high scoring game? Or is this going to be a game where Robert Saleh and the defense do everything in their power and figure out a way to slow down the Rams offense, but then the Rams defense also takes away what the Niners do best, and that's throw the ball in the middle of the field? And I bring that up because, you know, one of the bold predictions on the ESPN preview is that the Rams defense will slow down Mac Jones, because Jones is having tons of success in the middle of the field. Mac Jones leads all quarterbacks in passing value to the middle of the field based on the defense adjusted yards above replacement stat metric. But the Rams rank seventh in defensive DVOA against passes up the middle. So, you know, that's going to be interesting. You know,
hey, Kittle, Diddle. As soon as you say that out loud, I think George Kittle, that's where he operates. And it's funny, yeah, since George has come back, he has not been, you know, overused, over-targeted, prioritized, I think, in this offense. Maybe this is the week to do it.
Yeah, and makes me wonder. I mean, when, you know, he tore the hamstring. So, I mean, it's like, when you have a torn hamstring, that thing has to kind of grow back. I don't know if he's what his running ability really is the rest of this year. It's not like, well, you know, it's like there's grades of pulls, and then there's strains, and then there's tears, and then there's a full tear. And it's like, once it's fully torn, well, then it's got to heal back and do the whole thing. So I don't know. I get the feeling that speed-wise and running-wise, Kittle's not going to be the same player the rest of the way this year.
Well, more good news than, I guess, for the San Francisco 49ers on that injury front. You know, as this game comes up, as we look at the remainder of the season, where they are, do you feel any differently today, Larry, than you did when we did our big trade deadline special, which was basically 4 hours of us waiting for something to happen? Nothing happened at the deadline. We're not, you know, saying that they didn't trade for Brian Robinson Jr. or Keon White, but it really did look like there was an easy ad. It really feels like the name that has people most upset, it's not who you'd think. It's not Trey Hendrickson. It's not Bradley Chubb. It feels like the name Arden Key has more 49er fans upset that they didn't add him, because it felt attainable. It felt familiar. He had played well for them. And I know we talked about it. I was upset a little about it, too. The more I think about it, the more I'm cool with it, Larry. I really am. Because you know what this team is? This team is nothing but Arden Keys. They got 9 Arden Keys already on this team. Do you need a 10th? I don't think you trade for a rank-and-file player. You trade for a difference maker. So the more that I look at what the 49ers didn't do at this deadline, the more I kind of get it. And, you know, fans who are saying, well, they folded on the season, I disagree with that. I just think that the bet came back to them and they decided to knock. They're no longer re-raising the pot. And that might be the smart way to play this season's hand. I was angrier earlier this week at their inaction at the deadline than I am today. How do you feel about it? Did they blow it? Did they leave the chance to compete behind them by not being more aggressive for Arden Key?
It really depends how you look at this season. You know, you can't have it both ways. You can't be like, hey, you know, we've been disrespected and, you know, this and that, which is, I'm sure, what they're saying internally, you know, oh, this and, you know, it depends how you view yourself. I mean, if you view that some people are like, hey, you have no Warner, you have no Bosa, you have no chance. Well, if that's your view of the world, then yeah, why do anything? Why extend yourself at all? Just, you know, roll it out there. If you're really going to be in that, the season's over mode. But I think that's loser talk. I think, you know, I heard an interview this week with Adam Kaplan, who I thought really did a nice job. And he said, this thing's wide open. He said, anybody who makes the playoffs can win the Super Bowl. And I agree. I agree with that. And just if you don't, go look at the playoff fields and we'll look at it later. But anybody who any of these teams in the NFC absolutely can win the Super Bowl. So they, you know, I guess I get several feelings on it. I understand why they didn't do. First of all, we're in a position of weakness here. It's not like we have a list of, I mean, how can you say definitively they made a good decision or a bad decision? We don't know what they were looking at. You know what I mean? So we can't say they made a good decision. For all we know, they were looking at offers that were incredible and that we would have done easily in the snap of a finger, and they didn't do it because they're idiots. I mean, we don't know what they were looking at. So we can't judge if they were right to stand pat. I mean, were they right to stand pat? They were, if all that was out there was give us a first for Trey Hendrickson or a second for Jermaine Johnson. And if that were, those were the only two guys available and that was the ask, then I don't blame them for not coughing that up. And the same way I was critical of them for not making a move. Yes, I would be critical of them if they made the wrong move. So it's not like every time you don't make a move. And I heard John Lynch, he's like, we weren't going to get fleeced. But you know, he said that and it's like, okay, we're not going to get fleeced. And then he said, we would have extended for a difference maker. And I'm like, okay. But then in the very next sentence, he says, we have a lot of belief in this defensive line group. And then you're like, well, wait a second. Is John seeing things clearly? Because this defensive line group is not stellar.
He would have had to say that anyways.
Rush. So is that like some things you say for effect and some things you say because they're true and you mean them. And it's like you have to figure out which comment, you know, the D line, we have belief in the D line group, I think is kind of what you say for effect. And it's all relative. What level of belief? Well, you know, I mean, you have more belief. I would have more belief if you had Quinnen Williams. I would have more belief if you had Trey Hendrickson. Do I have belief in the guys in the room? Sure. But I would believe in them more if they were better. I mean, so I'm just saying this. How do I feel about it? I think that the league's wide open. They're 6-3. And I was thinking about it, Damon. I'm thinking, what is it that makes people okay with the inactivity? And I thought about it, and I think I have the answer. People are okay with the Niners not doing anything this year because they're looking at this year as a one-off. They're looking at this year as bad luck this year. We had injuries. We'll be back next year. But just for the sake of the conversation, Damon, let's just say that 2025 is the best roster the 49ers will have between 2024 and 2030, let's say. Do you still feel the same about inactivity at the trade deadline, that you didn't get any help in a totally mediocre year where anybody could win the Super Bowl if they get hot at the right time? To me, the Niners needed two things to win the Super Bowl this year. They got to get good quarterback play from Brock or Mac. They got three things. They got to be able to run the ball, and then they had to get some help on that defensive front, and they really didn't. So are they cooked and done for the year? No, but I do think they're going to have to explore other teams' practice squads. That's a high risk.
They're one more injury away from certainly needing to do that. You know,
they need help. I mean, Mike Silver said it. Let me just say this. The pushback from some people who are just out there, and I'm not going to name them, but it's just like, you know, getting mad at fans and people who are passionate about seeing the 49ers improve, trying to make it seem like we want this for some kind of personal sugar high. And like, we're these rubes and these unsophisticated idiots. It rubs me wrong, because the report from Silver was like, there are people inside the organization, plenty of people. This is his report. Plenty of people inside the Niner organization were hugely disappointed that the 49ers were inactive at the deadline. Why? It's not because we all need our jollies. It's because we all know that the defensive line is probably not good enough to win a Super Bowl with. And we want that sixth Lombardi, and we don't want to wait until the future for it. And it's, you're 6-3. There's only three teams that have a better record. The whole thing's wide freaking open. You're going to wind up with 10 wins because of this easy schedule. I don't know if Trent Williams is even going to be on the team next year. I don't know if Robert Saleh is even going to be around as the defensive coordinator next year. So, yeah, in this world where they're better next year, yeah,
I mean, I don't know.
Draft capital. But if this is the closest as you get, if 5 years from now we look back at this year and go, man, that was the closest. That team had Trent and Kittle and Saleh, and those guys were all gone a year later. I think there's going to be some regret that they didn't try to extend and get a little bit of help to push them over the top to make them more competitive. It's not going to take a Herculean effort to go to the Super Bowl, but it's probably going to take more than they currently have.
Okay, you said a lot there. So going back to the disappointment of not doing much, if I were John Lynch, the one thing I would say to defend the positions and decisions I made was Bradley Chubb's still a Dolphin. Narden Key is still a Titan. Like, nobody came for whatever the asking price was, us included. And that's probably right. The right thing to do. Like I said, I don't think you trade for depth. I don't think you trade for rank and file. You trade for difference makers. So now you're in that, well, Quinnen Williams was out there. How come you didn't go for a guy like that? Because they're not in a position to make that move based on needs and based on further previous investment already at the position. So I just think that they really did paint themselves into a corner that is only made harder to understand why they didn't do more based on their pretty successful record. I think that they played
well, and Niner fans are pissed, Damon, because they haven't hit in the draft. You're preserving picks for a draft process that has resulted in 18 misses. The Niners have 18 misses.
Right,
in but you're nine going, drafts.
Here's the thing: in the doesn't first matter. Rounds. It sucks.
Damon, that's two per year. It's that's two per year in the first three rounds. There's only three rounds. You can only have three. So they're missing two out of three picks in the first three rounds of the draft. Their entire tenure.
Well, then, so now the conversation is no longer about is Kyle Shanahan a good coach? It's John Lynch, and what do you do about him? Because he seems to be the reason that there is so much of a, well, what are you? Are you deep enough to actually be 6-3 in these terrible circumstances, or is your GM so bad at missing picks? I'll tell you this, the first three picks of the draft, maybe you do want to give those up. They found a Hall of Famer in George Kittle late in the draft. So what might be a good pick tomorrow is a hard thing to give away for an okay player today. So I don't mind the way that they've played it. If they're really looking at this as a, you know, they're a new.
Once again, though, you're throwing out these phantom things and saying, I wouldn't do that. We don't know, you know, yeah. I mean, I'm not yelling at you, Damon. I'm more venting at this kind of, I saw a lot of this week. I wouldn't trade all of our first and second round picks for a backup player. Who would? You know what I mean? There's all these people that when it doesn't happen, they find some safe ground and say, I wouldn't do that, as like that was the plan. We don't have a list. Like, if we had a list of these were the deals that were in front of them, this is what they could have done and didn't do, then we could say, you know what? I saw the list of deals that they had, and I wouldn't have done any of those deals, and I don't fault them. Or now in this situation, we just have to take their word for it. Like, somebody may have said, hey, we don't want T'Vondre Sweat. Give us a fourth-round pick. And the Niners may have just said, you know what? No, we're not giving a fourth-round pick. Well, in that situation, I think they made a mistake. So, I mean, it's very hard to say. I will say this. I think John Lynch is smart. I'm glad that he didn't trade a second-round pick for Jermaine Johnson. I'm glad that he didn't trade a first-round pick for Trey Hendrickson. I'm not wanting him to drive to make stupid decisions just for the sake of action. I'm not that guy. But I would have loved a 2027 seventh or one of these for like a Michael Clemens, just a little bit more, just something a little bit more. Now they may have to go off a practice squad to get some help. But the other question, I think the bigger question is,
you don't see a lot of teams take a seventh rounder 2 years from now for an asset today. So I'm not going to hold that against
them. It's happened already this year. I mean, you know, It's happened in this trade cycle. It's happened multiple times. But I mean, I got into this last night with Sterling. He was defending the keeping of the picks. Have you noticed that when people defend the drafting, whether it be the Giants drafting in baseball or the Niners drafting, they always go to the most recent drafts because time has a way of making things look, it's hard to be to pick right over time. If you like everybody right now is all this hope for this year's draft. But 3 years from now, how many of those guys will actually fulfill the potential versus fall through the cracks? I'm just saying when you have the perspective of time, like we do now in this regime, this is 9 drafts. They've wasted 5 number ones, 3 number twos, and 10 number threes. And I say wasted, those are the guys who are just undoubtedly crap and gone and gave you nothing.
Right.
I'm not even talking about the
spec. We haven't even scored
one. I'm not talking Ricky Pearsall.
Right, right.
I'm not talking about Mikel Williams. I'm not talking about Nick Martin. I'm not talking about Jair Brown.
You can talk about Nick Martin.
Right. Well, Nick Martin, we'll get into that. I think Nick Martin might play this weekend. But the point is just that's what Niner fans are a little bit concerned about. You conserved picks, but then you're not really efficiently making good player selections with some of those picks.
Look, fans are just controlled by emotions.
Nobody hits 100%. In fact, you might hit 50%. But 18 misses in 9 drafts in the first 3 rounds. Damon, if they had think about it. If they had half as many misses, if you gave the 49ers right now 9 more players that were drafted during this regime in the first, second, or third round that were still on the roster contributing, I would dare to tell you that this would be the best team in football.
Larry, it's the only reason why they haven't won the Super Bowl. You know, you could say it was Mahomes and Reed and the Chiefs and all those missed draft picks has as much to do with it as the Kansas City Chiefs and running into them in the last 2 Super Bowls you lost. It really is. I mean, the lack of success with early high-value picks is why this team hasn't won. Because I do know this about Kyle Shanahan. You give him the players, they stay healthy, he wins. If he had more players, more healthy players,
I agree. You get Kyle Shanahan, a good cast of players across the board, and he's going to be a dominant coach that wins multiple championships. He just has not had that personnel guy to step in there, and instead of going 3 out of 6, go 5 out of 6. Instead of going 5 out of 10. Go an 8 out of 10. And if they could just dial up their success a little bit, Damon, it would make all the difference in the world. They would be far and away the best team in football.
It would have changed the situation last year, this year, all years. Yeah. I mean, it's a dramatic swing and a difference between how about this? With all of those mistakes, it's still been pretty good. Right.
When Kyle's not. Oh, and by the way, Kyle, we shouldn't, you know, for those who might be sitting there going, hey, you guys are, you know, anointing Kyle and putting this on Lynch. I'm not. The Kyle takes responsibility. Why? Because they traded up for Trey Lance. They traded up for Dante Pettis. They traded up for Jalen Hurd. They traded up for CJ Beathard. They traded up for Joe Williams. They traded up for many of their biggest and worst draft flameouts to satisfy most likely Kyle Shanahan's whims. So I would say, Kyle, go to Cabo during the draft. Let your scouts do it. You are an awesome play caller. You're an awesome play sequencer. You're a good leader in season for the team. You're a great head coach. It's a totally different skill set. Go find, you know, Pete Carroll had to find his John Schneider. You know, Bill Walsh had to find his John McVay. Sean McVay had to find his Les Snead. You know, these are huge jobs. Andy Reid had to find his Brett Veach. You know, you got to have that personnel guy who can just hit. So, I mean, they need a personnel superstar to run the thing and make Lynch the president. And there's your, I was looking at them at the middle of the field yesterday at practice, Damon. It was Shanahan. It was Shanahan, Lynch, Saleh, Gus Bradley. And I think there might've been somebody else out there. Maybe it might've been Frank Gore. I forget, but it was basically like, that is the brain trust of the 49ers right now. It's Saleh and Bradley are the defensive kind of head coaches of the defense. There's a Kubiak, Shanahan, Lynch. That's it. That's the hierarchy. That's the brain trust. All I would say is add one more guy, you know, that super sharp personnel guy who's just right, you know, religiously. And then go win a bunch of titles. I mean, they're literally, they just have missed on too many of these picks. And you know, Lynch is could be a great president. He's done a lot of great things. Shanahan's a really great head coach. They just need to get a few more players. A little bit more personnel momentum is going to get this team over the top.
Let me not add on to the anxiety of how this team goes about building its roster. But the other thing that kind of came up this week was the question of, hey, is Brandon Ayuk going to come back into the mix? If we talk about all the draft picks, hits and misses, Brandon Ayuk is a hit, right? They hit on the Brandon Ayuk pick. He has played well for them. And even in that, there is this, what's his real value to us? We don't understand. We're frustrated with him as a player. And I guess it was what, put in front of Matt Barrows this week as to how and when Brandon Ayuk was going to be reassimilated into this season. And there's a question as to whether or not that's going to happen.
Coach Yak had this Matt Barrows on Brandon Ayuk. It could be a situation where they've opened his window. He's able to practice. He's able to get a running start on the off season, but not risk himself in a game. That may be what we're heading for. Basically, Shanahan was asked, "Hey, what do you think? Is there a possibility that Ayuk won't play?" And he said, "No, he thinks he's trending towards playing this year." And then Shanahan kind of paused and said, or at least having his practice window opened.
Okay. So let me just say right now, definitively, if Brandon Ayuk doesn't play this year, it is time to start firing this medical staff. And it is time to go ahead and bring in Brandon Ayuk's injury is not the moon landing. Okay.
John Lynch said it yesterday and I'm glad he did. It was a catastrophic injury. That's what I was saying. When all these people were like, oh, you know, he'll be back week one. I'm like, dude.
No, there was no week
this one. This was a catastrophic injury. He's not going to be back till Thanksgiving. Damon, I said he wasn't going to be back till Thanksgiving in May, and I thought that was conservative.
Yeah,
and
that's it's what probably, I've been saying the whole time. So
he's
Thanksgiving
probably not going to be back until December. It's probably not even going to make it back by Thanksgiving.
Well, I mean,
I would say for sure he's not back by Thanksgiving.
That's very, very disappointing because, again, it is a MCL, ACL, PCL, the whole shebang. We've seen that. We've seen that repaired. We've seen players return from that in less than a year all the time.
No. We've never seen people return. This is a catastrophic three-parter in the knee. It typically is going to take for sure.
It's the Adrian Peterson.
Well, it's the ACL. It's not the AC. It's the ACL, MCL, meniscus.
PCL. It's the full.
No. It wasn't the PCL. I don't believe it was ACL, MCL, meniscus. So either way, it's a full year deal, and he got hurt in week 7. And I was actually told it's more like a 14-month deal. So that's why I said Thanksgiving because he got hurt in week 7. I thought, well, he'd be back by, you know, week 12, week 13, something like that.
And how in God's name is there any like, oh, he could be back week 1 nonsense that was actually floated by people with credibility? How did that happen? And then this
somebody
is the reality.
Somebody just repeated something. Somebody had an agenda that day and wanted to push back on the doomsayers. And so they said it to the wrong person who repeated it, but that's just that's all that was. I mean, that was just, you know, people, you know, I'm sure whoever reported that somebody told them that, I'm sure they were told that. I guarantee they were. But just it was preposterous when you consider the injury and the fact that he didn't get hurt in training camp. He got hurt in week 7. So the fact that he'd be back this early was crazy. The bigger question, and there are people that I know around the team who have said to me that Brandon Ayuk is not going to play for the 49ers anymore, and that he's they're going to get him healthy and they're going to trade him in the offseason. I don't know. We'll see. There's an awful lot of talk. It seems like the Niners regret that contract. We'll never get the true answer on that.
Right. But, it feels like it almost instantly they regretted it.
Yeah. Yeah.
It feels like they regret. I mean, here's the thing. They regretted not trading him in the same draft where, you know, are they going to trade Ayuk? Are they going to trade Debo? They ended up neither. It was, again, more personnel issues, more what to do on the draft questions that we can draw back to the 49ers going, what are you guys doing here? What's the plan?
Yeah, I mean, by the way, we didn't even mention this one, but Jake Brendel's going to be back this week. Brendel will be back this week. So for those, there were people going, hey, Jake Brendel, you know, Matt Hennessy, and I was one of them because Matt Hennessy's got some great numbers in place of Jake Brendel. But Shanahan's like, Jake Brendel's going to be back, which is interesting because I was at practice yesterday and they have this drill where they do like kind of a two-hand shiver. And Jake Brendel wasn't really doing it. I mean, he was kind of mocking doing it, but he wasn't actually making the contact. So I kind of wonder what is Brendel's injury? What do we have Brendel's injury? I don't know. Does he have an upper body injury as well? Cause he didn't look like he was striking anybody with his arms the other day in practice, like he was maybe sore.
I don't know.
I'll see if I can find it.
But so Brendel back, no Pearsall this week again, right?
No Pearsall. So we're
trending no Pearsall.
Yeah, which is another, you know, it's like, you know, we kind of locked eyes in the locker room, and you know, I get the vibe that he watches a lot of my stuff, and I'm calling him out. So I'm sure I'm not his favorite guy, but all I'm calling him out is just saying, hey, man, I said during the draft, you know, this guy's success or failure will hinge on his ability to show real toughness, because that's a really tough position in the middle of the field. And he hasn't been able to show that. I mean, he's hurt and he's out and he's not contributing. So, you know, I don't know what to say. I mean, I'm not saying he's soft. It's a PCL injury. Those things linger, but this team needs him badly. And durability is a major part of being a great football player. And right now he's not showing durability.
I saw Tatum Bethune's name on a practice report or an injury report this week. He needs to play this week. Tatum Bethune is he's nothing short of one of the five most important 49ers right now. It's like Mac Jones, Trent Williams, Christian McCaffrey, Diamador Lenore, and Tatum Bethune are the pillars of what this team is built on right now. He better be able to go.
Yeah, I didn't see what it was listed as, but I think he'll be good to go. I mean, he's banged up, man. I mean, he's, you know, his body's beat up. This is what happened. The guys who hit the hardest take them, you know, have the most physical pain. I mean, this guy is a thumper. This guy shows up at the ball. He had 16 tackles. It's funny. I told people after he had 10, I'm like, man, that's his baseline. He's going to have way more than that. I predicted in one of our streams that he would have 15. 16 tackles. Here's the question. Does he get 20 in a game? If there was a team that just commits to the run and he's just out there in the base, just popping guys, I could see a 20 tackle game in his future. He's everywhere, man. He shows up at the ball and just, I love his physical, you know, mentality, man. He just looks to hit, seek and destroy.
Will there be a one tackle game for Nick Martin? D Winters, is he going to go this weekend? And if not, is Martin going to finally ever be identified as the next man up by this coaching staff?
Well, here's the thing about that. I mean, I understand he's an inside linebacker. I understand he's not a pass rusher. You can't put him at defensive end.
But you can. But in times of desperation, you can do anything you need to.
Yeah, but I mean, you can't line him up at defensive end. Okay, you can't. He's not a defensive end, and they don't do anything wild like that. But I wanted to ask this question yesterday. And I didn't get it. I didn't holster. I holstered it because I didn't. I had other things I wanted to get to. But if the Niners continue, since they didn't get any pass rush help, they're gonna, as you said, you're gonna have to think outside the box. If you watched Nick Martin at Oak State, they ran him at quarterbacks, and he hunted quarterbacks as well as anybody. I think if I was Robert Saleh, I would design some sub package and run this kid at the quarterback. You have to be able to have somebody who can move the quarterback off the spot on third down. In an ideal world, it's Trey Hendrickson on one side and Nick Bosa on the other, you know, or Bryce Huff on one side and Nick Bosa on the other. I mean, that in an ideal world. But when you don't have an ideal world, guess what? The job still needs to get done. So how are you going to do it? Are you going to run him off that spot with Clee Farrell and Keon White? Well, maybe, maybe not. But Nick Martin is such an athlete. He's so fast, so explosive. I designed some sub package that gets him on the field, and I send him at the quarterback. And to me, if this were the game they want to bust that out, I'm fine with that. I mean, delayed blitzes on Stafford from a guy like Nick Martin, something that forces Stafford to get rid of the ball or get detonated on. You got Nick Martin is too fast and too athletic and too explosive and too dangerous to use on four snaps a game on special teams. He has to get out there. They don't have enough good athletes. They have to find a role for this guy and run him at the quarterback. He was great doing this at Oak State.
Is Bryce Huff reappearing this week?
Yes.
Because if he is, the day just got a whole lot easier. I would almost think without Bryce Huff, I don't know if you can win this game. I don't want to put it on one guy, but he represents the concept of pressure, and they're going to have a concept of pressure on Stafford. Whether Stafford even feels it or not, they got to do something to speed him up just a little bit. I don't know if knocking him off the spot is really even in the cards. Just speed him up a touch if you possibly can. I don't think they're going to be dominant on defense for a single snap for the remainder of the year. It is bend, don't break from here to wherever this goes. And I just get off that field on third down. And sometimes the best defensive play the 49ers are going to make all week is going to be oh, thank God that guy dropped that. And I think that they know that. And that's why they didn't really reinvest in this year. I think they're good. They're not great. I think they know that. And good might be able to get it done this year, but there's probably going to be good that's better than their good. And this is a team that could do it. Now, hey, beat the Rams. Prove us
well,
all
you know, what? If, you know, that's great. What if you get, you know, you're probably going to the playoffs. I mean, you know, you're going to get in these playoff matchups, and it's like you're going to be like, well, we're not favored, so we didn't, you know, we didn't get help. I mean, you only get help when you're the best team. I don't know. I mean, they needed help. They didn't get any.
Do you think the Niners are going to win the Super Bowl this year? Just straight up. Yes or no?
They have a shot.
No, you don't get the answer. They got a shot. It's a well, yes.
They got a
no
shot.
Question.
Nobody, I don't think anybody's going to win the Super Bowl this year. I think everybody's got a shot. I picked the Niners and the Chargers at the beginning of the year to go to the Super Bowl. I don't think I would pick that right now, but both those teams have a shot. I just think it's going to be a wide open deal in the playoffs. I'm going to show you what I mean in a second.
Okay, if the playoffs started today, I know you wanted to kind of get into that. So what did you want to ask me about if the playoffs started today?
Somebody put this out there this week, you know, the playoff, like, you know, the picture basically of what it would look like if the playoffs started today. And I want to show it to you because it's pretty interesting. Okay, so let me see. Here it is.
By the way, this graphics package is one of your best. Okay.
There you go. All right. So basically what you're looking at there is right now, this is how the seedings are right now. Right now, the NFC playoffs, Philly's the one. They're the one seed, okay? Tampa's the two seed. Seahawks are the three seed. Green Bay's the four. Rams are the five. Niners are the six. And Detroit's the seven. Okay. So let's just say in the, this is how it would go in the wild card round. Philly would get the bye and the Colts would get the bye in the AFC.
Yep.
You just tell me who the winners are of these games. Okay. We'll go through this.
Sure.
Lions at Tampa. Who wins?
Tampa at home carries that day. Why not?
Okay. I think Lions. Okay. Niners at Seattle.
See, I need one road team to win a playoff game, and I'm going to pick the Niners in Seattle. They've already done it this year. I think they could do it again.
Brock Purdy, I don't think, has ever lost in Seattle. Rams at Packers.
Hell of a game, right?
Right.
Let's go Rams. Sure, why not? Let's go Rams.
Yeah, so I had actually, you know, because I think Detroit's really good. So I had Detroit beating Tampa. So if those things happen, if Detroit, Niners, and Rams all won, okay, that next round, the divisional round, Detroit is the seventh seed, the lowest remaining seed. They would go to Philly. The Niners and the Rams would play each other at SoFi, with the Rams obviously having the home field there, but the Niners packing the house.
But right? They wouldn't.
Right. Not in Niner in Levi's South.
Right. They would have the home zip code, but that's the Niners building.
The Niners basically could just if all they did all year was just dominate this division, they could ride that almost all the way to the Super Bowl. They would get Seattle in the first round, Rams in the second round. I actually think there's in the NFC Championship game, Damon, they're either playing the Eagles in Philly, but I actually think Detroit could pull the upset. If Detroit pulled the upset, it could be the Niners and Lions at Levi's.
Even if
the Niners are the sixth seed.
Yeah.
So my point is just that.
Yeah.
All these people talking about, well, you know, they don't have that good of a shot and this and that. They may wind up hosting the NFC Championship game at their place. So I don't know.
There's a scenario for that.
We'll see. We'll see. I think it's an interesting exercise. By the way, if you looked at
I think the Niners had long odds to win the Super Bowl when the season started. The Niners' odds got even longer when Bosa went down. Longer still the minute that Fred Warner got down. We still don't have when I don't know when the starting quarterback is just question mark, I'd say your odds get even longer, as much as I like Mac Jones. So, I mean, I just don't.
Some people prefer Mac Jones.
Well, that's.
We'll get into that.
That's something else. It's another show.
Yeah. Well, no, we're getting into that. I just think it's interesting. Wide open. Adam Kaplan said it. Any team that makes the playoffs can win the Super Bowl.
AFC. Been saying that for 3 weeks. Why don't you say Damon Bruce for a month has been saying this? Fuck Adam Kaplan saying it yesterday. I've been saying this for a month.
All right. All right. Big head.
Okay.
Number one seed.
This, so now it's true.
You didn't say it to me for a month. Maybe
I've been saying it on the show every.
You said that every single team that makes the playoffs could win the Super Bowl. No, you
haven't. I have said that. I said the playoffs is what every team.
If you can go dig that up, find that clip. We'll play it on the next week's show.
Okay.
AFC number one seed, Colts. The AFC matchups in the wild card round: Jacksonville at New England, Chargers at Broncos, Bills at Steelers. I mean, I don't know. I think it's wide open, man. I would probably go New England, probably Denver and Buffalo. But I mean, Colts as the number one seed in the AFC. I mean, it's wide open. All I've got to say is, like, if you told me that New England made the Super Bowl, I'd be like, whoa, at the beginning.
It would be ahead of schedule.
Right now, I'd be like, hey, you know what? They're 7-2. How about this? New England's defense. This might be the stat of the year. New England's defense. It's week 9. They're the only defense in the NFL to not even allow a 50-yard rusher, let alone a 100-yard rusher. They haven't given up a 50-yard rusher all year.
That's something else.
Watch out for New England. Yeah.
Well, you know, Keon White was a huge part of that, I'm sure.
All right. What have we not talked about? Oh, keys to the game. Give me your key to the game. What's your number one key to the game for the Niners in this game?
There's only one key for every Niner game. It's Christian McCaffrey. He needs to go off. I mean, will it be 40 touches? Will he actually get to 40 touches this week? It seems like there is no offense really anywhere but through him, unless Kendrick Bourne has a out of nowhere monster game, which he did against the Rams. So one other wide receiver, I don't even know who you're going to be, but join the Christian McCaffrey party when it comes to moving this football. Key to the game is McCaffrey's in the end zone twice again, Larry. I think he's going to need a 2-touchdown game for the Niners to win this one. And if he does, they got a shot to win it. They really do. Like you said earlier, all the Niners and Rams games are close. All of them. So I think this one's going to be close too. And if the Niners come out on top, it won't be because Christian McCaffrey had a bad day.
I'm going to say you can't have negative plays on first and second down. The Rams have not given up a third and 12 all year or more. So that's unbelievable. It's week 10. So they're death on third down. I was talking about this yesterday to Kubiak, and I mentioned to him, like, you can't fall behind the chains on first and second down. Does it change the way you call the game? I mean, do you get a little bit, you know, some plays maybe you have more penalties on, or maybe some plays are harder to, you know, to run than others? He's like, yeah, you just can't fall behind the chains. If you fall behind the chains on this team, if you get to third and long, your quarterback's getting killed, you're turning the ball over, they're going to make you pay. So that to me is the key to this game. No penalties on first and second down, and, you know, get to third and manageable. Even if you got to be conservative on first and second down, get ready for the Rams to defend the middle of the field better.
I mean, the Niners are no longer, as they're currently constructed, good enough to beat the other team and themselves. They just can't. They can't do that. That's not who they are this year. So play
just, this team game is painful. It's painful to get to third and long against this team because they just kill you. They just kill you. I mean, Verse is amazing. Byron Young's amazing. They're so strong on the defensive line that you can't get to third and long. Or they, I mean, the fact that they haven't given up one third down conversion of 12 yards or more all season. I mean, that's unbelievable. That just shows how sound they are, really. All right. There was Dan Orlovsky basically came out and said he thinks there's a quarterback controversy.
Real quick, let me just ask you, you ever seen Dan Orlovsky at practice?
No, he works in Connecticut. Okay. I don't play that game though, because you know, guess what? I mean, so do Niner fans who watch the game on TV know nothing because they're not there?
No,
I mean, but you have to be within 5 feet of the coach.
But I would just say that in order to be publicly declaring a quarterback controversy, you got to have something other than a hunch, a suspicion.
What makes a quarterback controversy a controversy?
Okay,
is it something that somebody says, or is it really more about performance and situation?
First of all, for there to be a controversy, I need to have a choice, and right now there is no choice. Brock is not playing. Brock is not healthy enough to play. So I have no choice. The choice between Mac Jones and Adrian Martinez is no choice at all. So there's no controversy until Brock is even back in the room ready to play. Until that week happens, I really don't want to talk about it. And I do know, because I talked to you, a guy who's been down there all the time, and the fact that I have been down there, it's been a while, but again, I don't cover practice. But it's a healthy room. It's a healthy room. Mac and Brock are super cool. I don't think Kyle has seen any, you know, dissension or there's no picking sides.
There doesn't have to be dissension within the team. You're creating something that doesn't have to be. To say there's a quarterback controversy,
I think the person creating something that isn't is Dan Orlovsky, I think is my point.
Well, I know, but I mean, you're making it sound like if they get along, there could be no controversy. But Steve Young and Joe Montana got along. I mean, their guys get along, but the bottom line is what his point is that based on the way Mac Jones is playing the position, that it's becoming a controversy. And, you know, as much as I know the 49ers aren't going to, you're not going to go up to Kyle Shanahan and say, Kyle, do you think there's a quarterback controversy? He's going to be like, no, it's Brock's job. If you go up to Lynch, is there a quarterback? No quarterback controversy. But it's really because they fear that circus and they fear that conversation. But it's not really for them to control or for them to anoint. It's really situational, is it not? I mean, if Brock Purdy's played one way, Mac Jones has played one way, how they play determines if there's a controversy. If one guy plays at this level and the other guy plays at this level, there's no controversy. But if they play at the same level, then there could be a controversy. Obviously, the Niners have decided to pay pay Brock Purdy. So they've committed to him, and that's why he's the guy. And Mac even knows that. He knew that coming here. But it doesn't mean that there's not a controversy, because Mac Jones is playing at a really high level. And we can pretend that we don't hear the people, and we can pretend that we're not hearing their arguments or seeing them in social media. But many, many, many Niner fans, it's clear to me, I mean, from the comments I get, and I get thousands of comments on all these videos that we do, there's a groundswell of people that think that Mac Jones is better than Brock.
Right. Well, that was going to happen no matter what, because there's a groundswell of people who are just anti-Purdy no matter what Purdy does. You know, so
Damon, you don't have to be anti-Purdy to be think that Jones is better than Purdy.
I actually think that you...
I'm not anti-Purdy, no, and I think Jones is pretty good.
Oh, listen. I actually think that you, because I do listen to what you say when you're talking, and I heard this. I think that you've handicapped this horse race probably better than anybody. I think Mac Jones is the better option as long as we got a turf toe injury. I think a healthy Mac is better than turf toe Brock. But both guys healthy, I think Brock gives the Niners more. He's proven it more in bigger games. I think he makes them more mobile. I think a more mobile quarterback is part of any success story this team might have in a postseason. So I am going back to a healthy Brock the minute that I can. But I'm also not rushing Brock back to be healthy Brock before he is, because I am so thoroughly impressed and satisfied with the job that Mac Jones has done. So I think you've handicapped this the right way. Until Brock is 100%, you got a player that's better than him. But the minute that Brock is 100% again, I think 100% of Brock is better than 100% of Mac Jones. And I think that everyone involved internally with the 49ers thinks that way too. And I'd be very surprised to find out otherwise.
I mean, the thing that makes this so intriguing is the fact that we don't know what Jones is capable of. And Jones looks better in this offense than he looked in Jacksonville or New England.
This is what's pissing people off right here. Brock might be a bit better, but he's probably not $100 million better.
Well, there's the other thing, too. A lot of people are like, hey, go with Jones. He's cheaper. Trade Brock, because then you can get better players on your roster because you got a cheaper quarterback. It's just a very interesting thing. I do think Brock's the better quarterback. I do think eventually he'll take that job back. But if Mac Jones leads this team through the playoffs and they win the Super Bowl with Mac Jones, they'll probably move on from Brock Purdy.
If they win the Super Bowl with Mac Jones, who cares what happens to Brock Purdy? Let's be honest, right? It's who cares?
I think lots of people care. But, I mean, who cares? I mean, lots of people care. But it's kind of like whoever wins it first. Now, I just don't know if we really know like what Mac Jones is, because Mac Jones was great at Alabama. He was a first round pick. I'll tell you the thing that I just can't get over watching Mac Jones is how a guy who doesn't look all that athletic, he doesn't look all that. He just came across like almost like a spoiled Southern frat boy at Alabama, but he is walked into this room. He's found a way to be himself and lead. But Damon, it's his accuracy. I mean, the guy puts the ball on his receivers all day. I mean, it's crazy. Backfield, running back, you got to layer it, no problem. You know, I mean, just down the field, no problem. I mean, he is very, very accurate. That's awesome. I can't believe how accurate he is. The more I watch him, I'm like, dude, I mean, like he'll have like that pass even this last weekend against the Giants. He gets McCaffrey in the flat. It's a broken play. But you still got to hit him, right? You still got to throw it out there to him. And there are quarterbacks, we've seen them, that can't hit that guy. And he just zipped it out there to him. And he turned, McCaffrey turned around. It's just like right there. I mean, like every time it's like right there. So to me, I'm watching Mac Jones and I'm thinking, I remember Steve Young and I got into a conversation one time and he's like, you know what, Krug? He's like, accuracy cannot be taught. You either have accuracy or you don't. You're either accurate with the ball or you're not. Now it can be improved, but it really can't be taught. It's part of your innate skill set that you either have or don't have. It's rare, very rare that somebody goes from, they're scattering it, they're inaccurate, they can't, to super accurate. And right. Mac Jones,
it's not like
very accurate.
Right. But he's not any more accurate than Brock Purdy.
Mac Jones, Damon, had a 74% or maybe 74% completion percentage at Alabama one year. He is very accurate.
He is, but he's not much more accurate than Brock Purdy. I got career statistics to prove my point. Career, Mac Jones, 66.1% completion percentage. Brock Purdy, 67.4% completion percentage. Brock Purdy in his career has been more accurate than Mac Jones. If you're saying, all right, well, what have you done for me lately?
Slightly. But if you go back to college, you'll see that Mac completed almost 10%.
And we had played college football. Who gives a shit? This is 67.
That's part of his record. That's part of his track record. That's part of his what he's demonstrated on the football field.
I tell you, and
77%. Really high. He's a very accurate player.
Isn't that what should have led this team to Mac Jones instead of Trey Lance in the first place?
I think there's probably reason to believe that maybe Kyle wanted him. And that maybe he got talked off of him by people who wanted a more dynamic player. I mean, I was one of the people at the time arguing for a more dynamic player. Give me a Fields, give me a Lance. We all kind of wanted the next Mahomes. And so we did this. I mean, we're the ones, who demanded that they not take Mac Jones. Lots and lots of people were like, you know what? Anybody but Mac Jones. I'm just saying, going back, there's examples that Mac Jones,
all I know,
is one of the most accurate quarterbacks of his time.
Yeah, all I know is
showing it right now.
You know, Greg Papa sits in on a lot of conversations and meetings, and then he goes with that as, here are my thoughts about the situation on his radio show. You had Greg Papa 100% saying, don't listen to the world. It's going to be Mac Jones. So I do think that is like the internal position of the 49ers. And then the 11th hour, it changed. And then all of a sudden, like a half an hour before the draft pick, you had Papa on draft day going, let's talk about Trey Lance because he might be, and so I think he heard a little something. And I think that there was a interest in one pivot to the other. We'll never know the real story. We'll never know the real story. But again, getting back to who you are in the NFL, who you are as the Niner quarterback. I don't give a shit about Mac Jones, the Patriot, Mac Jones, the Crimson Tide, Mac Jones, the Jaguar. Means nothing to me. Mac Jones, the 49er, in seven games this year, is a 67% passer. Brock Purdy, who's been disappointing, is a 66% passer. They're the same guy producing the same thing. That's why the offense kind of looks the same. And I think that's where the confusion comes from. That's where the frustration comes from.
I mean, it really doesn't. I mean, Jones has been much more underneath, where Purdy is much more attacked down the field. I mean, I think it's quite a bit different, actually. I also think Purdy is a down the field passer who they convinced to drop it off down underneath, but he really wants to drive it. Where Jones is operating almost exclusively underneath. I haven't seen Jones take too many deep shots in the last three or four starts.
I think it's been part of his success. I mean,
I don't know if they're the same. I mean, they're operating the same system, but they have a similar completion percentage, but I think they're a little bit different. I mean, the good news for the Niners is the best story of the first half of the year for the 49ers, obviously Christian McCaffrey's the MVP, but the best story is that they have two quarterbacks who they have under contract for this year and next year that are in their mid-20s that really are accurate, smart, can process, can run the system, and most importantly, have leadership skills, organic, natural leadership skills. Guys want to follow them. So the Niners are in a phenomenal spot. I don't know how it's going to shake out, but they're in a great spot.
This is why I almost have an allergic reaction to the quarterback controversy position that so many want to speak into existence. This isn't a controversy. This is actually a fantastic situation that should be the envy of other teams, not something that you look at and go, oh, there's a problem cooking underneath the surface. There's the pot that's simmering that nobody's paying attention to on the stove. But this is how this all boils over. I don't think so. I don't think so.
Those are those shows, man. I did a show on Mad Dog Radio, and my good friend Peter Schwartz was the update guy. And he did the full update. And I'm like, hey, Peter, can you come on the mic? He's like, why? Well, I'd like to talk to you about your update. And he goes, sure. He comes on. And I'm like, Peter, you just did an update where every single team lost. Do you realize that? This team lost to that team. That team lost to this team. This team Anybody lost to that tonight? Team. I go, nobody won tonight. Everybody lost? And he's like, well, I'm like, yes. That's Northeast misery right there. Get off your train, take off your snow boots, and enjoy life a little bit. People win. Not everybody loses, Pete. We had a funny segment. But yeah, that's kind of that's the name of nature of the game. And on those ESPN shows, it's like they've got a heart, they've got to swim in the negative. But they view it as a negative. It might not be a negative. It might be a positive because you control both of them. But I do believe that it may be a tad premature, but I think this is really all about the way the Niners handle it. If they put Brock Purdy out there, let's just say Sunday against the Rams, or let's just say they put Mac Jones, since it looks like Mac Jones is going to start. They put Mac Jones out there. Let's just say that Mac Jones beats the Rams on Sunday. He's now swept the Rams. Let's say he throws for 300 yards. He's now swept the Rams and thrown for 300 yards in multiple games against them. Okay, let's just say the Niners say, you know what? Purdy's fine now. We're putting him back out there. He goes right out the next week, and he throws three picks and turns the ball over and looks bad and floating passes and doesn't look the same. Right then, immediately, exactly right then, whether I want to admit it, you want to admit it, or Orlovsky wants to admit it, or anybody wants to talk about it, there will be a controversy. It's all based on performance at this juncture, at this level. I think it, you know, we know Brock's the guy. He's already getting paid, and he's the guy. He's the guy because they paid him. He's the guy because they anointed him. And Shanahan said at the beginning of the year, he's the only quarterback that we'll ever have here. But performance, it's the old, you know, this is a, what did Jim Harbaugh say about the NFL? It's the ultimate meritocracy. And so really it just comes down to,
hey man, you know, dinner was going great until you dropped my pasta in my lap. You know,
meritocracy, baby. It's beautiful. It's not about politics. It ain't about anointing. It ain't about money. You got to play, and you got to play well. And if you do, then you're going to stick. And if you don't, Jake Moody, you go. So yeah, that's just the kind of the way of the world in the NFL. And even if you're making a lot of money, so the Niners can get out of Brock Purdy contract if they wanted to. I'm not saying they want to, but eventually if Mac Jones became Dan Marino here and was just awesome and just like, oh my freaking God, they could get out of the Brock Purdy deal and move down the road. I don't think they're going to, but they could. And it's all out there. And I agree that it's not really a controversy right now. But it's amazing. They're just, you can tell back east, they're like, woohoo, this is going to be good.
It's not about what's happening. It's what else could go wrong. What else can I got plenty to sell to you today, but let me tell you about what I might be able to sell you tomorrow. And that is a huge problem with sports. You cannot stay in a moment. It's always about, well, what about the next moment? You know, you got people already mocking what the 49ers are going to do with their first round pick next year. We haven't had Thanksgiving dinner yet, folks. Can we come on?
I mean, it's just the way of the world. If tomorrow If Sunday Jalen Hurts had an injury and he went out for the year, would the Eagles be done? No, they would not be done. Why? Because they have Tanner McKee. He's a big 6'5 Stanford kid who's got a great arm and he's super smart. He's been in that system. And I bet you anything, Tanner McKee would step in, play really well, and they would win a playoff game. Are they going to win the Super Bowl? Maybe, maybe not. But if they did win the Super Bowl with Tanner McKee, there would be a controversy.
Oh, we just
if
did
he
that
played with that Foles well, there would be Wentz. A controversy.
We did it. We did it with Nick Foles and Carson Wentz. We've done that. We've danced that dance.
In that weird one, too. They didn't kind of go with either guy. And now, I mean, Wentz is totally cooked and Foles is not even in football. That was a weird situation. Let's Damon, hit some supers, probably.
Can you petition a ganja section at Levi's Stadium? When will that happen? So you figured it would have happened in Denver first. Do they have a huff and puff section at in Denver? We should have beaten the world to weed. We didn't. Colorado did.
But yeah, there's signs. Buddies of mine have gone to Coors Field and sent me signs that show like smoke your weed over here sections at Coors Field. So they do have like little areas there where they try to direct you based on the signs. I saw a sign on a brick wall that said do that. So there you go.
Let's get to the future.
There's gambling kiosks at Wrigley. By the way, sometimes you stumble into stuff on that you're streaming. I stumbled into 100-year. It's 100-year celebration of the history of Wrigley Field, and it's worth watching, man. It is worth watching. I watched it the other night. Really, really good. I mean, how it was named Wrigley Field, it wasn't originally named Wrigley Field. It became named after the guy who the chewing gum magnet.
It was the first sponsored stadium. It's the first naming rights deal in sports, Wrigley Field.
Yeah. Yeah. So Wrigley Field, unbelievable doc. If you get a chance to check it out. All right. We are brought to you by Habas Law, 1-800-INJURED. They will fight to make it right. Our super chats in this stream are brought to you by Habas Law. Omar Habas and Tariq Habas are great guys. They're rooted right here in the community. They do lots of great things. They really help people with their SNAP benefits and all kinds of different initiatives they're working on, animal rescue deals and animal adoptions. And they're just very much rooted in the community. They sponsored San Jose State Hawaii last week. Anyone, if you need someone in your corner, call the law firm insurance companies. Hope you never call, and that's Habas Law. They'll fight to make it right. Visit them on the web at habaslaw.com, HABBASlaw.com. All right, let's go to our supers. We got a handful of supers here. This is not a super, but this one says, who's this from?
I saw that earlier because they were talking
after
about
Damon show yesterday. They need to make a version of the Damon Bruce sandwich, spicy, maybe add pickles, jalapenos, pepper jack cheese, and habanero mayo.
I did a show yesterday that resonated with the people because I was very much blasting ESPN and YouTube for the fact that ESPN is being pulled off YouTube TV right now, and there is the phrase, what is best for the fans, probably hasn't been used in a single sports negotiation for over 25 years now, and it'll probably never be used again. What is best for the fans is something that every league, every streamer, every network has totally forgotten about. And if you're asking how too big to fail fails one day, that would be it. But let me tell you right now, too, now that I'm on YouTube TV, it has taken me all of 1 week to totally learn how to live without ESPN. I'm fine with it. I really am. I mean, wait until I start ESPN basketball games. But that's the thing.
What's the best part? What's the most indispensable thing about ESPN?
I have the correct answers. The games we watch and college game day. That's it. That's all that really matters, I think, on ESPN.
I mean, I like PTI.
When's the last time you watched, honestly?
this week. I mean, I watch it every week. I've got it in my taped things that automatically tape. So I just watch them at night. It's great. It's like my sports page. I can just roll through it. It's quick. I love it. Those guys are really good, and it gives me food for thought.
I like them. Absolute
buffoon, but other than that, I mean, he should just retire, but the other guy's pretty good. But Michael Wilbon sometimes just gets ridiculous. PWS, what does it say?
Triple B's back in the Bay. Baker, Bochy, Buster.
Bochy and Buster. Bochy's back as a special assistant to Buster. You know, that's good. That's good. And you know what? I think it's good just because for lots of reasons. But what if Tony Vitello is just a train wreck? Be nice to have somebody right there. Thomas Selman, first play of the game, take a deep shot to Watkins. Yep.
Well, I mean, Watkins would have to be on the field in order to do that. So let's see how often. I don't know when he hits the field. It ain't going to be for the first play of the game, that's for sure.
Watkins needs to play more. I'll stay with it. I think he's one of the best picks they've made this year. You know, the Niners run their team like a street gang. You got to have seniority, and you got to be like a made man. You got to have your brand and all kinds of things. And, you know, it's like literally the young guys have to like pay their dues. So I guess he's going to have to pay his dues. But once he gets out there, once they're smart enough to put their best talent on the field, you're going to see Watkins. And then when Watkins is out there doing awesome things in like 3-4 weeks from now, I want you guys to come back and tell me, dude, why did the Niners not put this guy out there sooner? I guarantee you at some point we're going to have that conversation about both Nick Martin and Jordan Watkins. Where have these guys been? Watch that. That's coming.
Let me ask you, Sunday, but it's coming. Not Nick Martin. So Nick Martin, what makes the 49ers front office look better or worse? Nick Martin doesn't play once again. So, you know, the third round pick in the draft is just non-existent. Or he goes out there, plays poorly, which means, man, all that reach and all the suspect you had of whether he can even play, he couldn't. So that's not good. But what happens if he goes out there and he plays great? I mean, at that point, you start saying, well, where's he been all goddamn year then? So they've painted themselves into a Nick Martin corner that's a little interesting as to how they get out of it.
Well, no, they're not in a corner. I mean, they started with Fred Warner. Then they had D Winters. I mean, there's other guys. It's not like oh my God, they're playing Gerald Hodges over this guy.
I know, but there's enough snaps in the game to have gotten this guy a snap. It's week 10. You know,
I would use him as a pass rusher at this point. So I don't know. Well, you know, Robert Saleh alluded to the fact that he is not there yet as far as the things that they ask him to do in this defense. So I'll defer to Robert Saleh on that. But this guy is a difference maker athlete, and it's anybody could see that. 49er fan for life. I think Kyle might want a change of scenery. Sometimes you're over it. Players were over who got it better than us. Who knows about Saleh? NFC is wide open. It's possible Kyle's going to want to change the scenery, but I doubt it. I mean, why would you? You know, unless Jed drives you out, why would you?
Right. You live in one of the best places in the world to live. You got a great job. You have a fully functioning franchise that sometimes makes some frustrating decisions. Frustration is baked into every NFL franchise. Incompetence is also baked into a whole lot of them, but not this one. Not this one. So, look, Kyle, I think Kyle gets to stay here on scholarship for a while still. But yeah, I mean, eventually all voices start to echo. So there is a finite amount of time here, but we don't know exactly what it is for Shanahan. He still gets guys paid. He still has the respect of his locker room, his players. He doesn't lose his team. His team doesn't quit on him. So all the, like, this guy's voice doesn't carry like it used to signs, I don't see any of them yet in Santa Clara.
Yeah, I mean, I'm in that locker room every day. There is no uprising against him. There's no guys looking around going, you know, this guy's, you know, sucks. I mean, he has the support of the players. There's across the board, without a doubt. There is no doubting that. Not in my mind. 49er.
Next one.
Okay, let's see. I think Kyle might want. Okay, we got that one. We got this one. Tommy Huxley. Brendel is a snack bar attendant, not a center. Jeez. Oh, that's harsh. Well,
first of all, I mean, what? Why take a guy? Why take a shot at the snack bar guy? I love the snack bar guy.
I mean, seriously, why do we got to do that? Quesadilla Thrilla 71. Damon and Larry, y'all think the lack of good personnel drafting is due to poaching of the staff? You know what I think it's due to? Too many people in your equation. If Damon and I decided we were going to make a decision, we could do it nimbly and just deciding you, him and I. If we incorporated our wives, this decision might be a better decision, but it would take longer. If we incorporated our children, the decision would take even longer. Now, you could look at it and say, well, two heads are better than one and 10 heads are better than four.
Eventually, you do get to the too many cooks in the kitchen, can't exactly put the best meal on the table. Where are they? Where are they in that? We don't know.
Well, and like Lynch is like, hey, when we're aligned in our decision making, we make the best decisions. Okay, but look at what it takes to be aligned. You have to have your coaches. You have to have your scouts. You have to have your executives. You have to have your road scouts. You got to have your analytics department. You got to have your medical team. You got to have, I mean, I don't know. I mean, that's how you make decisions. I mean, everybody. I mean, what happens to the year where the GM gets hot and picks like a bunch of winners? You almost eliminating the possibility of that even happening by incorporating so many cooks in the kitchen, as Damon said. I just think that it's information's good, but ultimately you got to have somebody who can pick winners, and it's a hard skill set. It's not easy to do. You know what I mean? An old football scout one time told me the hardest thing to do in the world is people evaluating people, because people are imperfect and their evaluations of others are imperfect. And we all have our biases. We all have our leans, our personal favorites. So it's hard. It's hard to do. That's why there's a lot of hit and miss.
And that's how you get Solomon Thomas. That's how you get Trey Lance. That's how you get James Wiseman.
That's how you get Israel Ifeanyi. For you old school guys. Quesadilla says, Damon and Larry, y'all think a lot lack of... Okay, there we go. This one, PWS, thoughts on Muneka Murakami being posted today?
Yeah, this is Japan's leading slugger, first baseman, third baseman from Japan. And all I'm going to tell you is he's going to make a wonderful Dodger, I'm sure.
Yeah, I mean, I would say pass on that guy. I've seen some of the highlights, but he looks like a really good power hitter, but he also looks kind of dead Polish to me. So I don't know. I haven't studied him, but he's the top international player for sure. And as Damon said, he's probably dreamt for the last year of being a Dodger, and I'm sure he'll be a Dodger. We got this one from Terrence. He said, love Mac, but let's be real. He's had three good games, two meh games, and two bad games. Not great games.
Not seven great games.
Oh, not seven great games. Special teams and defense actually doing their job this year. Simple. Okay. I don't think anybody's saying that Mac Jones is a superstar. I'm saying that Mac Jones has played really, really well in this system and looks like a natural fit for the system.
How often do you get to say the Niners definitively have the best at the position in football? I don't think they have definitively the best at the position in football, but for the position of backup quarterback. They have the best backup quarterback in football right now. How could you argue against it?
I mean, right now they're 6-3. There's only three teams with a better record. Purdy's played two games. He's 1-1. Mac was a first rounder for a reason. There's a clear arm strength. There's a clear arm strength and just overall arm talent difference with him and Brock. It matters. He's just better. So there you go. This is exactly kind of what I'm talking about. Those kinds of comments. And I'm not going to tell Propa he's wrong. I mean, it's like, hey, you know what? You're seeing what you're seeing. 49er fan, not saying players do not believe in him, but he might want to change the scenery, just opinion. I'm probably wrong. How is it not, or how is a hot GM, he picks winners? Or Howie is a hot GM.
Howie Roseman.
Howie Roseman, yeah. You know, there's no question. Howie's doing a great job.
How we doing so well.
Yeah. PWS, any offseason free agents you would want the Giants to sign?
Oh, God.
I like Kyle Schwarber. I really believe that Kyle Schwarber is made to play in that ballpark. And I really believe that if you had a Kyle Schwarber, I think you would do really well. I mean, do you want to do well eventually, or do you want to do well immediately? And I would say Tony Vitello is going to want to do well immediately. If I were the Giants, I would go sign a Kyle Schwarber and take your awesome dream of a guy in Eldridge and trade him for three pitchers and a good left fielder, because I think I've seen that kid. He's got a massive strike zone. He makes Brandon Belt look like he's in the Ricky Henderson crouch. I mean, he's absolutely standing straight up. He's like the Leaning Tower of Pisa. He's got the biggest strike zone in the history of baseball. He's hit 107. He has no defensive position. He had a 45% strikeout rate when he came up this year. He's not on the verge of anything other than making all Giants fans call KMBR going, where's Eldridge? Why not Eldridge? Trade Eldridge. So go sign Schwarber and go compete. If you have Schwarber, you have Devers, you've got some of the hitters you have, you got Tony Vitello, you can make a good trade for Eldridge and get some good pitching. You might be able to compete. Go compete. Like, tell yourself that you want to compete next year. Have a short-term plan to compete. Have a long-term plan to compete. But I would say Kyle Schwarber is the guy I'd want.
Get an Indiana Hoosier on every goddamn team in the market. Can the San Jose Sharks get an Indiana Hoosier? Schwarber went to Indiana. Curtis Rourke, CJ West, they went to Indiana. Trace Jackson Davis, he went to Indiana. Go Hoosiers!
That's going to do it for us. Thanks to Pig in a Pickle. Thanks to Habas Law. Thanks to Penn State by 21.
We're going to beat Penn State by 21 this week. We're going to win by 3 touchdowns in Happy Valley, baby.
What's the spread?
I think it's like 14.5.
Ooh, I'll take that. I love the way Indiana's playing right now. There's no spread can contain them. They just keep going. And they can score on offense, and they can score on defense, and they can score on special teams, and they do. And so you look up and you're like, oh my God, look at this team. I mean, the game is too long and there's too many series for them not to score 40.
Let's go.
How many times, what are they averaging this year? They're just an amazing team. That coach is an amazing player.
Indiana's given up 7 defensive touchdowns this season. 7.
We'll finish with this cut. This is a pretty good cut.
Well, we got a cut?
Yeah, we got a good cut here. This is Jared Verse. I don't know if you caught this.
Jared Verse. Is he not tugging on Superman's cape again? Did they ask him about Trent Williams? And he's like, nope, I'm not.
They're asking him about his teammates, because he's got some teammates from Florida State. He's a Renardo Green, Tatum Bethune, and here's what he had to say. Let's see if we can get this up here. Should be pretty good. Jared Verse.
This is a rivalry that goes back literally generations.
Could you not hear that?
This is a rivalry that goes back literally generations. I heard it.
No, but I thought, did you hear that like in my thing or just over the
I heard it in my headphones, so I'm guessing everyone heard it.
Oh, okay. Well, let me try it again. Here we go. Try this again.
This is a rivalry that goes back literally generations. In your second year in it, how would you describe it?
Nah, it's aggressive. I mean, I got teammates. Me and Fitz both had teammates from Florida State. You know, Renardo Green and Tatum Bethune. That, you know, they went to Florida State with us. It was like my brothers and everything like that. You know, they play for the 49ers. They text me Monday or Tuesday. Hey, happy birthday. I say, hey, thank you. got my phone. You my op this week. like I'm not messing with you this week. You my op. Like, it's simple as that. So, like, even your best friends, even your brothers, like, it's just different this week.
Will the birthday wishes be a little bit different post-game?
Oh, yeah, no, it's going to be different post-game. I want them to have sad eyes.
This is a rivalry.
All right, first of all, I like Jared Verse. I like him in front of the media, and I like him as a player. I really like him.
Great player.
That's right. That's sports. That's awesome. That's awesome. I love you guys. You guys are my brothers. We all went to college together. This week, we are enemies. You are my opponent. You're my op. I love that. Love that, Larry.
I love that too. You got to love football players, by the way. They're pretty real dudes. 49er for life. Change of scenery. Matt Rhule, right? Yeah, Matt Rhule signed a, you know, he's going to be the next coach at Penn State. And then he's like, I love that place. And all the while telling his agent, carve out a better deal here in Lincoln. I want to stay here in Lincoln.
Anyway, he's staying
in Nebraska.
Yeah, no, it's look at it this way. I mean, either way, you're at a school that's being dwarfed by the Indiana Hoosiers. You take all of your history and tradition and shove it up NIL's ass. Let's go, new kid in town. I'm so excited, Larry.
Are you streaming today at 11? I will be streaming in 4 minutes with Chase Senior. Damon, what is Friday bringing you?
Tell Chase I said hello. Always love his work. And Sam Batesh is going to be joining me around 11:15. We're not only going to be talking Niners, Rams, and what we think of this game, but just looking at Week 10. Week 10 is a gift to football fans, Larry. This is such a good week around the NFL. Patriots Buccaneers. Who had that as a monster game? You could have a Super Bowl preview right there. Patriots Buccaneers, right? You also got Rams Niners, obviously. Lions Commanders, though that doesn't carry nearly the weight it did because the Commanders feel
playoff
like they're done.
Rematch.
Steelers Chargers, Larry. Big AFC tilt for Sunday night football. Monster Monday night football, Eagles Packers. And one of the what would you say it is you do here games, a very sneaky, interesting game between the 3-5 Ravens at the 4-4 Vikings. The team that lives this Sunday in that game can think about the postseason. The team that doesn't probably can't. So that's a big game. There's a lot of good games this week. So enjoy, everyone. Thank you for watching. Hit like and subscribe. And Krug, you get the last word.
Well, I'm just going to say busy Friday. I'll be streaming with Chase Senior in a couple minutes from now, 12:35 Shanahan or 12:35 Niners will have their final practice of the week. We'll be out there for that. 1:35 Shanahan will have his press conference down here in Santa Clara. And then at 4:30 Northgate High School football, JVs, we're at Concord High School today. My son, Chris, his last JV game of the season, go Broncos.
Let's go, Chris Krueger. Let's go.
Let's go. He's playing more and more. He's making plays. And then 5:30, I'm on KNBR with Adam Copeland and Derek Pop at 6 o'clock Niners Nightly tonight on KNBR. Sammy Batesh and Brian Peacock will be by to preview 49ers Rams. So
Sam Batesh can go back on KNBR, but not me. That's something special. It really
there
is.
There you go. So listen for that. Have a great day, everybody. Thanks for tuning in to Wake Up.
It's time for us to bolt for the door. You know, I wrote a name down in an envelope, and it said Jake Brendel. And then I took it out, and I said, I wish I'd written Matt Hennessy.